Together, we can make your blonde, blonde. Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair 2 full shades to give you your best blonde every day.
Hair talks. Make your statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection, only from John Frieda. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where we are partying in September, no clue what we're talking about. Just kidding, kinda. Today we're gonna do a full-out Telegraph Pass mailbag episode and get to any questions we may have missed that people have submitted in the past. Before we get started, I'd like to set up a disclaimer for everyone that this episode will likely be a lot more shooting the shiz than it will be anything substantive. We'll probably be messing around, doing accents, and even singing more bad singing in lunacy for much of the episode in between our Lakers Q&A. So if you don't like our off-the-rail moments, just turn us off now, because that's what it's mostly going to be.
Just save yourself the next 47 minutes.
With that being said, Alan, speaking of shooting the shiz, however you may interpret this as, what is your percentage at shooting the shiz?
Oh, dude, it's like 98%. I'm such a good shiz shooter. Let me put it this way. I'm the type of guy who will finish hanging out with a friend, you know, after a few hours, and then we'll just end up talking for another, like, 30 minutes to an hour right outside that person's door or right in front of the person's car in the parking lot or something like that. So, yeah, I'm a good shiz shooter.
Cool. I would say I'm about an 85% shooting the shiz guy. So we should be good.
Oh, we're for the rest of this episode. We're going to actually record for, like, 3 hours, guys. So appreciate the effort we're putting in.
Exactly. But, yeah, before we get started, once again, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many posters featuring the young core in construction hats and orange construction vests the Lakers front office will print out and hand to people during the games this season, because I honestly can't see any other team photo topping that one. Can you?
Dude, they look like such nerds in that picture. It's hilarious.
They should just forego the normal team photos in their jerseys and just use the construction vests and hat one.
Because I love it.
And it's perfect, right? Because it's Lakers rebuild,
yeah,
under
totally.
Construction, quote
Absolutely.
Unquote. So yeah, rate and review us. And speaking of reviews, we're going to have Coach Mermoise recite the reviews for us today. So, Coach, are you ready? This is from Kiss Forever! XP for serious Lakers and basketball fans. You know, as much as I love ESPN LA, this is not John Ireland being a homer for 3 hours straight. Obviously, these guys are huge Lakers fans, but they'll give it to you straight. In an era of Lakers history where we'll be watching a young core of players develop, these fellas will break it down to the nitty-gritty, tell you things you probably missed. Plus, Ala is the man. Want in-depth analysis on the greatest franchise in professional sports? Well, you've come to the right place. All right, thank you, Kiss Forever.
What up, Kiss Forever? Thanks, dog.
Yeah, Kiss Forever! XP. Thank you for that review. Once again, on iTunes, go and write your rating and review, and maybe we'll read it on the air. So, with that said, before we get into the actual basketball stuff, we talked about shooting the shiz, so why don't we do some more of that?
Let's do it.
So, Alan, in this summer interim, what have you been up to pass the time and fill the void?
Man, last weekend, I went to 2 weddings. I went to one on Friday and one on Saturday, so that was fun. It was lit for show. Smoked a cigar for the first time in my life, so that was enjoyable. I've never smoked anything in my life.
Oh, like, they gave out real cigars.
There was a cigar bar.
Oh my god!
On Saturday, which was awesome, and
it's adulting to the next level.
Yeah, dude, I was like, you know what, man, I'm gonna do this. This is with all my high school friends, and this is gonna be like a great moment, super monumental. Friend getting married, so I tried that out and felt like a freaking man for sure. And then I actually went to a Rancho Cucamonga Quakes single A minor league baseball game yesterday.
What?
So I could watch Clayton Kershaw do his rehab assignment.
Ooh, nice.
Sure, we got a lot of Dodger fan listeners out there as well. So yeah, I just saw him strike out a bunch of guys who were trying to make it big in baseball, and was probably less than 100 feet away from him, which was awesome. So that was a lot of fun, too. I'm a huge baseball fan, so postseason's coming up. Excited for that, and very, very excited for the NFL. Watched a crap ton of college football this weekend, too, unfortunately. I'm a UCLA fan, and, you know, they lost an OT.
Yeah, they had a close game. They came back from, like, down 12, right?
They did not look good. Offensive line was terrible. Josh Rosen getting sacked all over the place, but then they came back, pushed the OT, you know, and then your Trojans. Trojans.
It started off pretty well. Like, for the first 10 minutes, it was 3-0. Our defense was killing it. And we were like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that Hurts guy, that true freshman quarterback that they have, forgot what his name was. It's Hurts.
Hurts, but,
he regained his footing, and Alabama, man, they're good. That's why their defense is amazing. They kept crushing our O-line and, like, getting to Max Brown. It was a debacle.
Ugly, I was not expecting that. I mean, I thought they would cover the spread, 14.
It was only 14 like 13, 14, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely thought they'd cover, but I didn't think it was going to be like this. So, as a UCLA fan, it's like, okay, that's good, but at the same time, I don't like the SEC, so kind of pisses me off. But SEC had a bad weekend, so that's a good thing.
If there's anything to take away for Trojans fans, it's that we were supposed to lose to Alabama anyways, and this will probably wake us up even more because it was such an embarrassing loss, and if you want to have an embarrassing loss, at least have it in the first game so you can regroup and reevaluate your lives. So that's hopefully what's going to happen for us
Trojans. You guys will bounce back against Nevada State or whatever it is this weekend.
So, fight on. I guess with regards to me, I told Tommy this in our last podcast, but the way that I've been filling the void is through some unfruitful coffee meets bagel dates. But on the positive end, Alan, you were actually supposed to go to this concert with me if you hadn't had a prior obligation to attend to. But last Thursday, I went to a My2K revival tour of a couple pretty famous TRL bands. That's 98 Degrees, O-Town, Ryan Cabrera, and this girl group called Dream. I don't know if you remember Dream at all.
I don't.
Okay, so yeah, they're pretty obscure, but I will have to say it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
The concert in general wasn't put together very well, but all you have to say is throwback and bring out these old school songs and people are going to go nuts. So Ryan Cabrera, obviously, we had a little On the Way Down. And if you remember, you know, me and Alan were in marching band together, and I think it was my junior year, your sophomore year. Yeah. We went to the 2004 presidential inauguration.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
In Washington, D.C. And during our span there, we had a special concert put on by like these pop stars that they allowed us to go to. And Ryan Cabrera was one of the performers.
I remember that. People were going nuts.
And he performed On the Way Down with his Sonic the Hedgehog's golden spikes. these days, he's rocking his hair one of those like gelled swoops behind his head. So he almost looks like a vampire, kind of. And unfortunately, like outside of the fact that hearing On the Way Down again was pretty cool, he was not very good live singing at all. I don't know if he's been smoking cigars or something, but his voice is like a lot weaker.
Oh, sucks.
I will say he was able to show off a little more of his guitaring, which was pretty sick.
Okay.
But when he was singing, I could probably sing On the Way Down better. Yeah.
Shoot.
With regards to O-Town, do you remember Liquid Dreams, right?
I do.
But outside of those songs, they sucked live. Pretty much what you're getting from me is what we heard on stage, and it was not very impressive outside of the nostalgia factor. But 98 Degrees.
Yeah.
I have to say, well, the other three guys, not that great. But Nick Lachey.
Yeah.
I guess I never paid attention to how great this guy was vocally.
Mm.
But he was so on point and super strong. His voice, like, even in the midst of, like, dancing. So the way that they came on was, like, I was asking my friend Lucy, I was like, how do you think they're going to come on? Do you think they'll be dressed up or something? And so they come on, and there's, like, fire in the background.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're all wearing these camo pants with, like, these bulletproof, like, vests on. And I was like, oh, shoot, like, legit 98 Degrees, like, back then, you know?
Right, right.
And they come on, like, literally on fire.
It's like flame retardant suits.
Yeah, and then they start dancing and singing. It was pretty dope. And, you know, Nick Lachey, I have to say, by far the best vocal performer on stage that night, which I guess isn't saying that much given what I just said. But he was really, really good vocally.
Nice,
I was very impressed. And Yeah, it was fun, man. It was a good throwback night. They had some cameo performers, like Mark McGrath came out to sing, like, I just wanna fly, put your arms around me, baby. And then AJ came out randomly, and they sang I Want It That Way. Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
They did some covers of popular 2000s, 1999 songs
that you hear
on TRL and stuff. So it was just like a good night of throwback stuff. So
yeah, dude.
Too bad you weren't able to come out, because it would have been
back to like early 2000s.
Yeah, it would have been
middle
lit.
School, high school.
So I don't know if we have listeners out there who are our age, you know, in that 25 to 28 range that remember TRL, true millennial status. So that was a lot of fun. We're doing a liquor
shout out to Staples Center hosting them.
It was actually not Staples Center. It was across the way, Microsoft.
Okay.
I did see the Staples Center all gloomy and nothing was going on.
I thought it was in Staples. I was like, oh dang, that's a big ass venue.
It wasn't
Microsoft Theater. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't that lit, but it was fun regardless.
Quick tangent. How is the Microsoft Theater? I haven't been there for anything yet.
It's really nice. Cool. You know, I think I like it because it's a little more intimate and, you actually, wherever you're sitting in the house, like, you don't really have a bad seat.
Okay.
So, and my tickets were like $30. So yeah. To get that nostalgic time machine experience was worth it.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
Yeah, so that was that, and that's how we've been coping with the summer without Lakers basketball. And we are doing a Lakers podcast, so
if you're a first-time listener, just be patient. It's cool. We got this.
Or just turn this off.
Just fast forward.
Just fast forward. Okay, so let's get into mailbag questions or our Telegraph Pass segment and get serious and provide some substance here. So let's start off with a question from... I'm trying to, like, segue into this normally, but I can't.
There's no way. It's okay. just go for it.
All right, so this is from Casey Keel. His Twitter is at @mckaseyisokay. And his question is, what do we think each player should be working on this offseason? D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, and whoever else we want to throw out there. We can do D'Angelo Russell. What do you think D'Angelo should be working on this offseason?
First and foremost, leadership and maturity. Mm-hmm. Surround yourself with the right people. Have good influences. Honestly, this sounds kind of cheesy, but read some books. You know, do some research on how to further yourself as a person, you know, like work on that personal development, and a lot of the other stuff is going to come from there. That might sound like sort of a roundabout way of improving things like that, but it'll definitely work. I don't know if he has people whispering in his ear, you know, things like that, but that's just my opinion. I think that would be very helpful. As far as on the court stuff, court vision, you know, study a lot of game tape from other extremely successful point guards you'd want to emulate your game after, hang out with the coaching staff all the time. That way your assist to turnover ratio can improve. We know his shooting is good. Obviously, you can always work on that, but keep working on the post game. At this point, he probably has strongest post game on our team. And otherwise, I mean, defense is always something to work on. Keep getting stronger. Just, it seems like the guys are living in the gym. If you're following them on social media, they have this thing like called the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Where all these guys, all the young dudes, have been in the gym at whatever time, like probably 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, pretty much throughout the summer. You see Zubats there after he came back to the States from Croatia. It's good stuff. So that's what I think D'Angelo should be working on, is number one, leadership.
Yeah, I think he's been doing that in terms of the way he's been talking with Luke a lot. He said he talks to Luke pretty much every day, so if he can continue to do that summer, that would be great. In line with what you said, I think D'Angelo, on court-wise, should be working on his dribble and tightening that up and making sure that it's solid and that he's not getting too flashy with it and just learning, you know, more of the fundamentals, because we know he has shake to him and he can do all these flashy passing, but just really reading his teammates better and learning how, where everybody likes their to get the ball and where their spots are, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, just continuing to progress his three-point shot. He's on the right trajectory right now. And yeah, leadership is the number one thing. What about Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, I think that's a good point you made, actually, with him knowing where his teammates need to be. I mean, we've heard Kobe say it a lot, where these guys need to not just practice a lot this summer, but practice with each other. Mm-hmm. That way they all get to know each other's games and they can have that synergy, you know? So that, I think, goes for every single one of the guys, is
for sure.
As far as Clarkson, I mean, these are things that we talk about all the time. He needs a consistent shot, especially from three. Last year, he started out hot. You know, I don't remember for how many months of the season, but I feel like it was November and December, probably the first 2 months. He was shooting over 40% from three. It was automatic, even though it's kind of that, like, Shannon Brown shot where he jumps as high as he possibly can, you know. And then he definitely tailed off and regressed to the mean. So he's got to work on his consistency from three, without a doubt. And he's got to work on his defense again. In his exit interview, he said he's never worked on defense in his life. No one's ever told him to practice it. So, I mean, one good thing is I've never been to a Drew League game. And there are reputable players who go. I know we here in Southern California sort of associate it with Nick Young. But, you know, James Harden goes and some other reputable guys do as well. And those are good opportunities to work on your defense, at least from a principal standpoint, I guess you could say. It is just street ball. There's not a whole lot of coaching happening, but you can obviously still apply the fundamentals. So I would be thrilled if he comes back this season as a solid defender that doesn't get screwed on pick and roll, trying to guess, that isn't playing the passing lanes, you know, like over aggressively going for the home run. Just be a solid defender. You can't be a liability as a two. If you're playing the point, like, I get it. Who can guard players A, B, C, D through Z, right? Because it's so stacked. But again, as a two, you got to stick to your man, right? Like, don't get lost as you're running through screens. Don't have brain farts where you start playing like center field, like Kobe. Yeah. You know, because Kobe's been doing that for how many years now? And it's kind of like, well, it's Kobe, and that's just what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not Kobe. You're Jordan Clarkson.
And that was years of already establishing himself as a first-team all-defense NBA
exactly,
guy.
So. Exactly. That's why you get away with it. So, yeah, hopefully he really took that to heart, you know, when he said that. So those are my two things for Clarkson.
Yeah, mine are pretty much the same thing, and it seems like at least from his three-point shot, he's been really working on that this summer, just being a straight catch-and-shoot three-point shooter who doesn't need to dribble around and play with the ball. If he can just shore that up, that would be amazing. And just to continue to form his shooting guard skills in terms of cutting, knowing when to cut, knowing how to curl off screens, etc., so that he knows, you know, he's probably not going to get the ball as much in the way that D'Angelo has the ball, but if he can be that prototypical shooting guard, that would be amazing for us. One who doesn't need the ball to be the most effective. If he can do off-ball stuff, that would be amazing. And then, of course, defense. We don't have to go into further detail about that. If he can just be a solid team defender and less of that Russell Westbrook gambling type of defender, that would be leaps and bounds for him for sure. So let's move on to Julius Randle.
All right. So for Julius, you got to work on that right hand, buddy.
Yeah,
got to work on that right hand that you cut during practice the other day. And it's going to be messed up for a couple weeks. So that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I saw that, I was like, God, I wish you'd cut your freaking left hand. That way it would force you to do everything in your right. And I mean freaking everything, like eating with your right hand, writing with your right hand, wiping your butt with your right hand, like whatever it takes to become more ambidextrous, you know, I'd be down for that.
I heard wiping your butt with your right hand helps you scoop with scoop later. So I'm just kidding.
More efficiency, say some toilet paper.
Yeah.
Off the rails. Potty talk is awesome.
Yeah.
But nah, for real. He's got to work on that right after like next week, I guess.
Yeah.
Hopefully all summer, you know, he's been doing it. And the thing is, like, we say that, and it's very idealistic, but a guy can work on it all summer, and even if it's, like, in a 5-on-5 drill, it's not the game. You know, like, there's nothing at stake when you're just practicing. So you do have to wonder, in game situations, will he have the confidence or the balls to bust that stuff out? I don't want to say I'm skeptical, because we haven't really seen anything yet, but I really hope we can just see flashes of him going for it, even if he's bricking shots or whatever. If the right-handed type footwork is there in the paint, etc., that's all I want to see.
Yeah.
As far as other things, gotta get a mid-range jumper. I mean, if he can shoot 38% from like 12 feet and out, I'd actually be pretty okay with that. I don't know what he shot from that range this year. I didn't look it up on Basketball Reference.
I think it's like 35, 36%.
So really?
Okay. It wasn't that great.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if he can get it up a few more percentage points, you know, just get closer to 40%, that would help us out quite a bit. Obviously, if he could get up to like 45+, that would help us out tremendously.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for him to shoot threes or anything crazy like that, but he's obviously going to be able to find his spots in mid-range, and guys are just going to leave him wide open because at this point because they know he can't make it.
Yeah.
So, got to show that you're a threat from there. As far as defense, he's pretty solid.
Laterally and on man, he is. Off ball is where he...
Oh, yeah, he's lost.
Yeah. Team defense, I think that goes for most of those guys, but definitely right, Randall. Right. It's like he's an airhead out there sometimes.
Yep, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, he does look lost. So, I mean, those things are just going to come to practice, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are the keys to Randall's success.
Yeah, I agree with you on pretty much all those same points. I think he needs to, outside of the jump shot is the biggest thing, obviously, offensively. I would also like him to learn how to just roll hard, stop the jab faking when he gets it off the pick and roll, set a hard screen, and then just roll. Work on his body control instead of just bashing into people. Learn how to, you know, avoid contact a little and do like a finesse scoop layup or something, you know? Just work on his body control, learn how to just straight roll, and then show some diversity in your post game, which he doesn't have right now. It's always like a face-up game.
Yeah.
You utilize that drop step a little more in the baseline, you know? You're a strong dude. You can bully people once you do that, but yeah, just show a little more advanced footwork. Like, plant your feet, pump fake, go up. You know, just show a little more diversity and skill set down there, because I know he can do it. It's just hopefully the game starts to slow down a little bit for him instead of just him just thinking he has to go like 100 miles per hour all the time pretty much. And then defensively, of course, it's like learning how to just hone in every possession, not just when he's guarding a guy straight up man to man. And if he can learn how to be a better rim protector, that would be great too. I don't foresee that happening, but you know, that's fine. So yeah, Julius Randle.
He should study some, and this is a lofty name to throw out there, but he should study some Karl Malone pick and roll, man.
Yeah, man.
That's what I would just be doing all day long. It's like, we're not saying you need to be the second all-time leading scorer in the NBA, but obviously you can pick some things from what he did and do your best to get there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, lastly, we'll just keep it at the young core four, even though we have Zubats and Nance and all this stuff. But for time's sake, let's end with Brandon Ingram here. Casey says, I don't want to hear the size talk again. So outside of size, what do you want Brandon Ingram to be working on this summer?
I would say, because offensively, his game is advanced. It's very mature. He should work on his free throw shooting, actually. That's one thing that pops into my mind from the mid-range and from three. I mean, NBA three, we'll see how he adjusts. Summer League was a little rough for him out there. So that's just going to take some time. But what did he shoot at Duke? Was it sub 70?
Yeah, it was sub 70.
Yeah, it was like 68-69%. Yeah. That's unacceptable, period. So I don't know what it is with that, but you got to get that up to 80%.
Yeah, it's just mental focus, really.
For sure, for sure. Defensively, you know, you think about these long wings like a Trevor Ariza and guys like that. When it comes to, like, his lateral quickness, he is very long, so that's going to help him. I don't really know how quick he is, you know, if he's doing, like, a sliding shuttle run type drill or something through the paint. So hopefully his footwork is there, but he just turned 19 this past week. So I would say defense is going to be the thing.
You know, at Lakers,
it's going to be a huge adjustment for him in the NBA level guarding wings.
Yeah, you know, Peter Zayas at Laker Film, we actually did a defensive study of Brandon Ingram's defense in the summer league, and I went to one game and I saw some discouraging stuff about his strength and his inability to fight through screens, but outside of that, when there wasn't screens, he actually teleported on the floor very, very well in terms of sliding his feet. He'd like contest, he'd like go into the post and help out, and then if the ball whipped out to the perimeter, he'd be able to jump out and contest that. So in terms of lateral quickness, I'm actually not too worried. It's like when someone screens him out. Can he fight through that and be able to, you know, shoot the gap there? And I think that's what I want to see him work on. And, you know, I know Casey doesn't want to hear about strength and size, but he really does need to.
I mean, those things go hand in hand.
Yeah, they go hand in hand. He's going to need to work on that a little bit. I mean, no, a lot of it this summer, and really just gain some core strength, like bulk up a little bit so he can handle that.
Yeah, because if he knows when to, you know, go over a screen as opposed to under, but he simply can't because he doesn't have the strength to do it, I mean, what else is he going to do, you know?
And in terms of, we know he's so fundamental offensively because he can just turn around and shoot and no one's going to block it. But that strength is going to help him, and getting some more girth down low is going to help him actually back his man down. Because right now when he posts people up, he, if you notice, he actually won't back his man down. He'll just shoot around and shoot it. Once he gains some strength, he might actually be able to get a better, closer shot because he'll be able to actually back his man down, especially guys who are his size or taller. Yeah. Right now, he can back down the smaller guys just because he can. But if anyone's his same sort of size, he'll just he won't be able to do it, and he'll just turn around and shoot it, which is fine, but you'd like him to get better percentages of shots and looks. So.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for Ingram. You know, just continue to stick with it. And he says he's trying to learn how to be more vocal. You know, I encourage him to keep doing that and learn more about his teammates. And I would actually say for him to work on being more aggressive and not being afraid to, like, defer to these guys just because he's a rookie and whatnot. So if he can come into this season with a mentality that I'm going to do me, I'm going to do my game, even though I like to set my teammates up and just read the room pretty well. Sometimes he actually fades into the background too much. It's like the opposite of D'Angelo Russell, where he's like, oh, I just don't want to make a mistake. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's totally fine if he shows a little aggressiveness. So I think we'll leave that question there because kind of going along with this one. But kind of in line with that first question, this next question comes from at Joe E. Bautista, that's J-O-E-E-B-A-U-T-I-S-T-A, he says, what do you think each individual Laker will average this season? And for time's sake, we'll just leave it with the young core once again. D'Angelo Russell, what do you think he's going to average?
I'm going to say 18 points, 4.8 assists, 3.7 boards, and 1.2 steals.
All right. For D'Angelo Russell, I will go with 17.5 points, 4.2 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1.7 steals, and then I'm hoping he shoots around 37-38% from three, and I will be very satisfied with 43-44% from the field.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with those numbers.
And, you know, D'Angelo Russell, I think he already averaged like 1.2 steals this season, so with a little bit more time on the court and a more consistent role actually as a starting point guard, I think he'll be able to get his steal numbers up. And then obviously with Luke Walton's offense and him gaining more comfortability, learning how to be the playmaker, the lead playmaker, I think he averaged like, what, 3.3 assists or something along those lines.
I'm because everyone learned how to be a great ISO player last year.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can get that up to around 5 assists or so. So what about Jordan Clarkson?
Clarkson, I'm going to say, let's say 19 points per game.
Okay.
Feels a little high as that comes out of my mouth, but I'm just going to say it, whatever. Too late now. Go with 4 boards, 2.8 assists. It's funny, I'm going to give him more steals than D'Angelo now that you mentioned he already averaged 1.2. I'm going to say 1.5 steals for him. And as far as shooting percentages go, I'm going to say 46% from the field. Oh. And from three, I'm going to say 35%.
Okay.
That field goal percentage is more like what I want to see.
Sure, sure.
So we'll see what happens.
Jordan Clarkson, I think he'll have around 18 points as well. Okay. Probably 18 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. I'll take 45% shooting from the field. And if he can just keep what he did last year, I think he shot 36%. Shoot 36% again, but like average more around 1.8 to 2 threes, that would be amazing.
Yeah, definitely more efficiency.
Yeah, and then obviously, stats-wise, I don't care. You can average 1.2 to 1.5 steals. Just make sure you're a solid team defender, and I'll be very happy with an 18-3-3 kind of season from Jordan Clarkson with improved efficiency, because I think his efficiency actually dropped this season from his rookie year when he
got that
second half start. Okay, so what about Julius Randle?
Randle. I'm going to go with 14.5 points per game. I'm going to say 9 boards, probably like 2 assists. Blocks, 0.9.
Yeah.
Basically 1. As far as shooting, field goal, I'm going to say 45%.
I'll take 45% considering.
I want it to be better, but I'm going to say 45.
He shot 42.9 this year, so I'll take 45%.
That would be a good increase, and that's pretty much all that matters.
I mean, I pretty much have the same predictions. I have 14 and 9. I I have to believe that his rebounds are going to regress with a better team around him, right, and not as much chucking and, like, bad shots going around.
Yeah, there aren't going to be as many misses.
And so, probably Luke telling him to not just stat hunt for rebounds and actually play defense instead, you know? Yeah, so yeah, kind of like that Kevin Love thing where Kevin Love would almost look for the rebounds instead of just playing defense. So I'm guessing there will be a slight regression. If he can become a more efficient offensive player, I think that would be the biggest thing for him. So 14-9, 2 assists with 45-46% from the field would be amazing. Hopefully he can shoot maybe in the 72% from free throw land. I'm not expecting him to average like one steal and one block, but if he can average like 0.8 in both categories, that would be great as well. All right, what about Brandon Ingram?
I'm going to go low on the high side here. I'm going to say 14 points per game.
Okay.
Rebounds, say 6. Assists, actually, pretty good playmaker. So let's go with 3 assists, mm-hmm, per game. Steals, dude is long. I'm going to say 1-ish. 1.1.
Okay.
And then as far as block shots, less than 1, but, you know, whatever, like 0.7 or something like that.
Yeah.
Field goal percentage, let's say, I'm going to say 44%. And as far as threes, go with 33.
Cool. All right, for Brandon Ingram, I think he's going to have a very D'Angelo Russell-like season in terms of what D'Angelo Russell did last year. He'll have some up and downs at the start, and then I expect him to be pretty good during the second half last stretch of the season. So I'm going to go with like 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. I expect him to maybe do 1.2 steals and 0.9 blocks because he's long. Shooting-wise, he doesn't take very many bad shots, but I imagine because of the strength issue, he'll have some pretty bad shooting nights. But I'd say 44-45%. And shooting threes, I don't know how long it's going to take him to translate the three-point shot into the NBA game, because if you remember in Summer League, he struggled a little bit. Finally got going like towards the last 2 or 3 games.
Yeah.
So I'll say maybe he'll average like 1.1 threes on hopefully 35% shooting, because I really think he's a pure shooter, so we'll see what happens. Maybe Summer League was just an anomaly in that sense. But yeah, 13, 5, and 3 should be a solid baseline for Brandon Ingram. And if Luke's system really helps him out, then who knows? Maybe he's a 15-point kind of guy.
Yeah, we'll
have to see.
How many turnovers do you think D'Angelo's going to average
this year? I think he's going to average a lot, just because he's going to be learning how to be the lead man again. So, but if their turnovers that makes sense, then right, I'll live with that, you know? But if they're like the mindless turnovers where he's not even paying attention, then that's the stuff I can't live with.
If it's like, oh, that turnover made sense back in high school.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool anymore.
Let's finish it off and add Larry Nance into here.
Okay.
I'll start because I think I have Lance. I mean, this is kind of contextual, because if Larry Nance ends up becoming the starter, then I think he could average around 11.7 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block on like 56% shooting and really be a solid, solid contributor to this team.
Right. So are we saying in the context of starting?
I expect him to start at some point. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. All right. If he's starting, I could see him averaging anywhere between 10 and 11-ish. 11.5 tops, probably. As far as boards, I could see him getting about 7 a game. Blocks, 1.5, even 1.6.
Yeah.
He was swallowing guys up in Summer League. Yeah, he made it look easy. As far as assists, he's pretty unselfish. So I'd say about 2.
Yeah.
2 assists. Field goal percentage is going to be high for him. Yeah, I agree with your 56-ish%. And from 3, I'm going to add that in there because he wants to, too. I'm gonna give him a 33.
Okay.
I think 33 would be awesome.
Yeah, I'll do 33% for him and say he's going to average half a 3 a game, which would be pretty. Okay, maybe that's too high. 0.3. I'll live with 0.3. So he hits about like
every
25 to 30 threes this season, and that would be a huge improvement. And I'm hoping from like 20-foot range, he's like a 45% shooter.
Yes,
That would be great. Who else can we do? I mean, Zubats, you know, he's not going to get time, so it's kind of pointless.
Yeah,
so
let's guess
that.
How many minutes per game he's going to play.
Luau Deng, quickly, I'm just going to shoot it off and say maybe he's going to be like 14.6 rebound kind of guy. Mozgov, I'm looking at 10, 7, 1.5 blocks, you know,
yeah,
if he's healthy and he gets his 25 minutes per game or so. So what about you?
Dang, I agree with you. As far as points, he's going to be a very solid contributor because he's just a very solid player. He's most mature, obviously. We were talking about this a couple days ago. He's going to be like the leader of the team, really. Yeah. So I could definitely see him getting his as far as points. I think you could max him out actually at like 15 and a half points, at least for maybe like the first half of the season while guys are kind of getting their footing. I think about 6 rebounds, maybe like 5.7 or something. From 3, he loves that short corner.
Yeah.
He's good from there. I don't know what he shot last year with Miami from 3-point range. I'm going to guess it was mid-30s.
Yeah, it was probably mid-30s.
Yeah. He's consistent. He's not going to lose a shot, so that'll probably be about the same production there. And as far as minutes per game, I think that's actually an interesting topic for Dang. Depending on how he holds up just because of age and whatever, what are you thinking, like 30-ish minutes a game?
Yeah, because he'll play some right at the there. 4 as well. So
Yeah.
Yeah, so he shot 34% from 3.
Okay,
1.2 exactly. Makes, so yeah.
Yep.
Very
yep.
consistent.
Right. So, yeah, that's what I think for him. As far as Mozzie, yeah, I think 10 and 7. I would be very happy if he got, like, 10 and 8.5. Yeah. That would be huge if he could pull down that many boards. And then, yeah, as far as blocked shots, he's a good rim protector.
Yeah.
So I do anticipate him getting a little more than one block per game. And let's hope for games played.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
You know, he's around north of 65.
Yeah.
That would be great.
For sure. And here's my dark horse. EG Anliana, I'm going to go with, for somehow, some way, I'm going to go with 7.5 points and 4 rebounds on 45% shooting, making 1.3 threes a game on 35-36%.
Did you want him to get those incentives, don't you?
Yo, I do want him to get those incentives.
Your contract, you're gonna get paid, dude.
So something that I forgot to mention in our last episode where me and Tommy talked about his contract was, I feel like we shouldn't understate the fact that EG Anliana knew the type of contract he was signing. And he signed this contract knowing, you know, you guys could screw me over at any one point and not play me.
Confident.
So I'm going to sign this and make sure that I know that I can play, so you're forced to make a tough decision if you're like, wait, but he can actually help our team. I want to give him his minutes, you know?
Yep.
So I think he could end up being a very solid contributor if he's as confident. Yeah, if he's confident in himself and he knows that he can show stuff now. Like, he signed this contract knowing I'm ready to ball out and I'm going to prove myself, and I don't want to just be a trade chip here in this scenario, because he knows I could essentially be sat down if I'm not up to par, pretty much.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yeah, I like 7-4.
Yeah, because I think,
sounds great.
Like Tommy said, his worst case scenario coming into the draft was Channing Frye. If he can be like a Channing Frye for us, that would be
Channing
amazing.
Frye has a freaking place in the league.
He does.
There's no doubt.
So he played better than Kevin Love at times for the Cavs this year.
Yeah, he's a huge difference maker.
If EG Anliana can do that, amazing.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to our third question of the night. And actually, we're gonna give ourselves a break and give you guys a break from hearing us talk. Tommy pre-recorded this segment. It's about Tariq Black.
All right, so last year, Tariq's per 36 numbers are 9.7 points, 11.4 rebounds, 1.3 blocks. Pretty impressive per 36-wise. I guess, where do you see Tariq Black's role? How do you see it fitting in with the team this year? And do you think he could be like a really good backup big? Or how do you, I guess, what are your impressions of Tariq Black? Because we didn't really get to see him enough last year, I guess.
So I really like him. He's like one of these, it seems like every team has one of these guys now, or they are popping up in the drafts all the time. But he's one of these like 6'9 dudes with like a weirdly, he's got like a 7'1 or 7'2 wingspan, supremely athletic. And so because of his wingspan, he can sort of play some center, and he's got good strength too. I mean, he is a center, let's be honest. He doesn't have power forward skills, but I go back and forth, you know what I mean? Like, I really like him. The per 36, everybody, I mean, you at least know how I feel about that, especially with a guy like Tariq Black, who's barely playing. And then to the extent he's playing in garbage time. Like, I give the per 36 in these cases very, very little weight. But yeah, I mean, I think he definitely has potential. I feel like he's wasted 2 years of development with Byron. For that reason, I'm a little bit concerned, because I feel like he should be farther along given what his age is. But we got him on like a pretty decent deal for even like a third string center, and let's just see what happens. I don't think he's right based on what we know now. I think it's impossible to say like, oh, this guy can be a backup center for sure. But I am 100% sure he's going to get spot minutes, and we're going to be playing all kinds of crazy lineups, and guys are going to be constantly changing positions, and he's going to, you know, get probably 10 minutes or so a game playing as at the center spot. So I think Tarik definitely, he might get more than that actually, but I think he definitely has a lot of potential. I really like his explosiveness. I really like his ability to finish. He's like probably our best finisher. I like that he rolls really hard off of the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And the main thing he's going to have to shore up is his weak side defense, because he gets shot blocks, but he's also out of position like way too much. And again, I think that might come with experience because he hasn't really developed.
Right.
But I don't think Tarik Black doesn't need to be a guy who hits a mid-range jumper, hits a free throw line jumper. I think he actually can hit a free throw line jumper, but he doesn't have to do that to be successful. To get back to the question for now, I don't think I can say like, oh yeah, this guy is for sure a backup center, because we just don't know. You know what I mean? Like if he put up those numbers 9 and 10 for an entire season playing 20 minutes a game, that would be much more impressive to me than, you know, whatever his, or even if he was actually playing 30 minutes a game, let's say, and putting up 9 and 10, I'd be like, okay, well now we know who he is. But to extrapolate based off like a guy who played half a season at best, I don't even know how many games he played, but maybe he played 40, 50 games or something and then was playing very spotty minutes throughout that time. I think it's impossible to say, okay, this guy is a 82 game per season, 20 minute per game, 15 to 20 minute per game backup center.
All right, cool. So from Tarik Black's potential as a backup center to our actual starting center, Timofey Mozgov, we have a question from David Markway. I'm not sure how to say his name. It's Markwei, at Dave's World 57. He asks, can you talk about Luke Walton's view on Mozgov's role for the Lakers as a defensive anchor / guy who they can play through? And, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, and I just think Luke Walton sees Timofey Mozgov as this Andrew Bogut type center who is pretty versatile on offense because he's a great pick and roll guy. In fact, he shot 69% on cuts and 66% on rolls to the rim last season, or in the last two seasons. And he has a 0.4 assist to turnover ratio in the half court, which ranked among NBA's lowest last season. So I guess that's that's not very good. But I don't think we need him passing like Andrew Bogut. And Luke Walton hopefully will, his system will allow Timofey Mozgov to at least make the right reads, hopefully, even though he has a very low assisted turnover ratio in the half court. But realistically, I think Luke just wants this guy to set hard screens, roll really hard, and dunk the hell out of people. And that's what Timofey Mozgov, when he was healthy, could do. And then in terms of being a rim protector, you know, back in, even last year, Timofey Mozgov was a top 10 rim protector, with a minimum of 1,000 minutes played. So he saved 1.38 points per 36. Going over the last 3 years, Mozgov's defensive field goal percentage allowed at the rim. In 2014, he only allowed 47% shooting. 2015, 47% again. Last year was a little bit worse with 48%, but at least he's keeping guys who are in that close to the rim under 50%, which is great.
So, this is one of most bigs' average, over 50% shooting, right? So you gotta figure, when he's in the game, he really affects it from a defensive standpoint.
Exactly. So I think Luke is just looking at this guy to be, hopefully he's healthy, and if he's healthy, you know, he can do all those things, be a solid pick-and-roll guy, be a solid rim protector like he's shown to have been in the past, and then he's also got a pretty decent jump shot. We're not looking for him to be, you know, all-world jump shooter like a Marcus Aldridge or something, but once in a while he'll be able to hit that pick-and-pop shot that Roy Hibbert was able to do last season. But really...
Like he was? Like, you mean like 7 years ago?
Yeah, maybe that. But yeah, really he's just going to be rolling and dunking and stuff like that. What about you, Alan?
Yeah, I definitely envision that as well. As long as, like you said, he isn't wandering out there in no man's land on defense... unfortunately, these days, that's what bigs do, though, is they get out there in space that is definitely where he's going to have trouble, and you got to hope that the weak side rim protection is going to be there from either Larry or Julius or whoever, even Ingram. But as far as defense in the paint, yeah, I think we should be able to expect a lot better results than this last year. I know it's what we all hope for in Hibbert, that in a contract year he'd return to something close to his all-star form and whatever, and he was pretty god-awful half the time. He was just sitting on his ass under the rim instead. Yeah. So with Mozzie, again, the big question mark is just health, but as far as what Luke envisions for him, from a defensive standpoint, he's just going to be just a really solid guy. Yeah. And then offensively, yeah, like you said, as long as he's just setting good picks, which he does do. Just go on YouTube and look at his offensive highlights, this guy is a freaking wall. He's very, very solid, and guys are bouncing off of him, basically. And he does roll hard to the basket. He really does. He's got good feet. And he dunks hard, too. He's not soft. Hibbert is soft.
Yeah.
Hibbert will be right under the rim, and he won't dunk it, and he'll just miss a chippy. Mozgov's goal is to tear the rim down. You can really see it.
And he can catch lobs. Do you even remember one Roy Hibbert alley-oop?
No, dude. He'd go off his fingertips, and again, he'd fall on his butt. Yeah. So there's no way.
So D'Angelo Russell is going to have a fun time throwing lobs to Timofey Mozgov, knowing that guy can catch the lobs, you know? So
Yeah.
Should be a vast improvement on offense on that end. And, yeah, you know, like you said, Timofey Mozgov, his biggest weakness is going to be guarding the pick and roll. And, yeah, we're just going to have to hope the team defense helps him on that end. But if he's just there to protect the rim and guard other big men like Hassan Whiteside, I think he can do an adequate job at that. And once again, he's only going to be playing 25 minutes or so.
Right,
so
right.
At that rate, he should... If he's healthy, he should be a very solid starting center for us. He will never live up to his contract, but at this point, it's a sunk cost. We just got to hope that he's a solid 10, 8, 1.5 kind of guy. All right, so let's move on to our next question, and this is kind of projecting into the future a little bit. And right now, I still haven't, you know, I think we're projecting the Lakers to maybe win around 30, 33 games or so. But regarding our actual philosophy into the season, I don't think we're in that tank philosophy yet. But this question comes from @PeriesR. If we get a top three pick next year, what position should we use our pick on? Or do we pick best talent available? So I'll go first, and let's just talk about philosophy in general. I think usually you always go best talent available. Now, the only times I think that you don't go best talent available is if you're actually the Lakers and you've stockpiled a number of different assets. And let's say in our scenario where we have Julius Randle and Larry Nance, two very solid, could be starter caliber type power forwards, I think, you know, this upcoming year in 2017 is going to be one of the strongest, deepest classes. I think within the top six, though, there are like three point guards.
Yeah.
Elite point guards, one really good power forward in Harry Giles. You know, I know people remember Harry Giles because they keep showing that Zubats clip of Zubats blocking him like two or three times in one possession, but he's actually a pretty athletic guy along the lines of an Amari Stoudemire and like Nerlens Noel type, just super athletic, could be a great rim protector. So I think in the case of this, like let's say Harry Giles, the Lakers have the number three pick, and Harry Giles is there, and he may be the best player. He may be better than the number four player, who would be like Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum is this small forward. He's got this Paul Pierce-y, Paul George-y type game. Very smooth, fluid. Not explosive athletically, but...
Paul Millsap. Yeah. What other Pauls do we have? I'm just kidding.
No, not Paul Millsap at all.
I'm seeing another Paul, that's all.
Yeah, but he's a very prototypical, like, smooth-looking wing with a pretty good jump shot. So let's say Harry Giles is at number three, is objectively the better player than Jason Tatum, but he's only better by like 5 points, you know. Let's say Harry Giles is a 90 and Jason Tatum's an 85. At this point, do you say take best player available, or because we already have Randall and Nance, and presumably we've heard that people think that Brandon Ingram's future position is at the four as well, do we just take another four in Harry Giles? And at that point, I think I'd say, well, it's not a given that Harry Giles is going to be better than Jason Tatum in the future, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's only 5 points, percentage points in terms of a gap, I think at that point you got to think about positionality too, because it makes your job as a front office a lot easier.
Yeah.
And at that point you just hope, well, we'll develop Jason Tatum better, and he might still end up being the better guy in the future. So
what if I told you, just I get what you're saying as far as what you do in these types of situations. So Harry Giles, according to this Draft Express, he's
6'11". 6'11".
So really, he could play the five.
Play the five.
More so than Randall and Nance and those guys, for sure. So would that change your opinion then?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. It would. But I mean, I guess in...
But I see what you're saying. Let's just reverse it. That doesn't really matter who it is at this point. If Jason Tatum were ranked third. Okay, well, Jason Tatum is 6'8". He's a wing.
He's a wing.
And let's say he is better than Harry Giles, but it's only by 5 percentage points. Then do you go with Giles because he's the center and Tatum's the wing? Then maybe you would.
Yeah. I think it's just assessing what you have on the roster, and I think it would be silly to say best player available in all contexts. You know, you have to weigh the options a little bit, especially if the gap isn't that great.
Yeah,
I guess is what I'm saying. So totally. But yeah, usually for the most part, majority, it is best player available. Like I said, we've talked about D'Angelo Russell being a point guard or a shooting guard. Number one right now in Draft Express is Markel Fultz.
Markel Fultz, 6'5", 186-pound, freshman.
He's like this Russell Westbrook. It's like if D'Angelo Russell and Russell Westbrook were fused into the same player. Super smooth.
Yeah,
but also,
just imagine D'Angelo, but he's able to dunk from the free throw line on an alley-oop to himself.
Yeah. So very explosive,
that Markel Fultz.
He's a very explosive.
Then let's talk about Dennis Smith.
So Dennis Smith is this, 6'2", flashy point guard. He's like a Nate Robinson type guy.
This guy belongs on an N1 mixtape tour.
Yeah. So he's definitely dynamic. We'll give him that. Like you said, he looks like a street ball player.
He's 6'2", 160 pounds. Little guy.
Yeah. Very athletic, though. So we've pretty much, like I said, we've got three point guards in the top six, along with Jason Tatum, who's a small forward, and Harry Giles, who's a power forward. There's also another wing named Josh Jackson. I haven't really seen him play yet, but...
6'8", 203 pounds.
Yeah, but clearly you're looking at positions that the Lakers currently have filled up. If you're looking at Jordan Clarkson to be a bench player, then maybe, right now it doesn't seem like any of these guys are shooting guards. But I think you go with best player available for the most part, unless you have a situation, like I said, Harry Giles being a power forward and Jason Tatum being a wing, I would probably take Jason Tatum over him. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know, is Harry Giles ranked ahead of Jason Tatum or no?
He is by one.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's how we do it. And of course, let's say we do get the number one pick and Markel Fultz is the best player, you're going to take
Markel
Fultz.
If he's the most talented guy, just freaking take him. I mean, it's a positionless NBA at this point. I'm sure he has point guard skills, and I'm sure he's got shooting guard skills, just who else? Freaking everybody. Yeah. So it is what it is. And then you move Clarkson to the bench, and you got these two combo guards that just kind of figure it out.
Yeah. Either D'Angelo will play the shooting guard spot, or Markel Fultz will play the shooting guard spot. It really doesn't matter. And you can go back and listen to our D'Angelo point guard shooting guard episode to make you feel better. Yeah.
Yep.
So that is what it is. So
Markel Fultz, he actually averaged 4.8 assists per game at Hoop Summit, Jordan Brand, McDonald's stuff, FIBA Americas, and all that. So the guy has point guard skills for sure. But just in looking at couple 3-minute highlight videos, he looks like a scorer.
He does.
Yeah.
For sure. I think that'll do it for our Telegraph Pass segment. I think we covered a lot of questions today, about 5 or 6. This is probably a super uneven episode. I'm sure most of you are probably saying, but it's summer. We're just trying to fill the void here. Hopefully, if you have a long ride to work or commute, this help you forget about that. We'll be back and hopefully have more episodes with substance in the coming weeks, because training camp is pretty much in 2-3 weeks or so.
Almost
3 weeks
here.
Pretty much.
And we'll have a full on media day
coverage
breakdown
kind of
episode.
Preseason starts a little earlier than usual, October 4th. There'll be more news to come. For some reason, Swaggy P is not waived yet or stretched, not sure why, but I still expect that to come. So because, we've signed more people to our training camp. Zach August hopefully will get a spot. For some reason, there was rumors about Carl Landry, the Lakers being interested in Carl Landry, which at this point, we have enough veterans between Dang.
I'll take him over David Ware.
Sure. Who's David? Oh, Travis Ware.
Oh, Travis, the other one. they're twins.
But David Ware sucks too.
Go UCLA.
Oh, there's a David Ware?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's David and Travis. They're twin brothers who transferred to UCLA.
Oh, so David Ware is still at UCLA right now?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So he's just not doing anything.
I have no idea. They're the same person to me.
Okay, that's too bad. but yeah, so Carl Landry, I don't think that's going to happen. That may just be like his agent throwing the Lakers' interest out there once again so that he snags onto some team. You know, Carl Landry's a pretty decent veteran guy, but given that we have Deng, Jose Calderon, Marcelo Huertas, to a lesser extent, Timofey Mozgov, E.G. Anliana, I think we're fine on the veteran landscape of things. So, and I don't think they'd give up a roster spot to have a guy
Like Carl Landry. We don't need him taking minutes from Randall and Nance, et cetera. Yeah. You know, it doesn't make sense.
I mean, even if we did, I would see him as a babysitter, like kind of what Meta World Peace was this year. But at this point, why not just leave that roster spot open in case of anything? And in case of the inevitable E.G. Anliana trade that happens where we need to fill in another roster.
You want to go for the upside.
Exactly. All right. So with that said, I think that'll do it for our show. Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
Nah, not really. Good luck to everyone playing fantasy football out there, I guess. You know, starting up on Thursday night. And go Pack go. Sorry, all you L.A. Rams fans out there. I've been a Packer fan my whole life, and I ain't jumping the boat just because the Rams are here. So go Packers.
I'm an Eagles fan, but I'm going to jump into the L.A. Rams bandwagon. I'm going to do it. I have Todd Gurley on my team this year, and I'm ready to see him go nuts. So, yeah, and Tavon Austin, eat better breakfast. I don't know.
Yeah, stop eating bananas and get those cramps.
If anybody's watching Hard Knocks on HBO, you know what we're talking about. But, yeah, so we're kind of going all over the place like we have been this entire episode. So we'll just shut it down right now. Once again, follow us on Twitter, at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes because, like I said, the more you rate and review us on iTunes, the more Lakers construction hat posters the Lakers will produce this season, so you can hang it up on your wall and be like, this is the team I follow.
Hashtag rebuild.
They're amazing, and they look like they're about to sing YMCA together. So it's great. It's going to be a fun year, man, and everybody's hyped. D'Angelo Russell loves his coach. The camaraderie is like crazy. If you saw that random Twitter exchange between Larry Nance, Zach August, Zubats, Clarkson, D'Angelo, all talking about like FIFA, playing video games together and trash talking. Night and day from last year, essentially. And we can all get on board with those good vibes for sure. So yeah, also, if you want to send us mailbag questions, telegraph past questions, follow us on Gmail. Or not follow us on Gmail, but email us at Gmail, thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com, and you can shoot us questions there. And actually, if you want to send us a quick audio recording of yourself just asking the question, like a 30-second audio clip, we'll actually play it on air, you know? I mean, don't make it like a huge monologue or something like I do. Because
then we won't play it on air.
Because then we won't play it. But but if you want to actually be on the show, you know, send us an MP3, just record something for 30 seconds to a minute, and we'll play it on air and then answer your questions.
Yeah, so that'd be cool.
So, yeah, thank you guys for listening and putting up with this off-the-rails episode. I'm not even going to bother to promote this. It's going to be up there if you want to listen to it. So,
I hope you guys had fun listening. I had fun recording this.
We had fun recording this. And I think for anybody who's been at least a semi-long-time listener and fan, I mean, you know we're pretty smart. I mean, I hope so. You know that we come with the substance, so you can live with these episodes where it's just like us talking about literally nothing sometimes. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening. And Alan, I will catch you later, man.
Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day weekend, everybody. Peace out.
Lates.
And after struggling and battling, pushing and pulling, and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.